Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's the debut of Early Stoppage with Fight Night Picks. Today we're joined by our new host, John Franklin, to break down what's going on with John Jones, what's going on with Dana White, and the state of MMA. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Other suckers was guessing I was gangsta sex in elementary. Wasn't meant for me. Can't regret it. I'm headed for the penitentiary and cutting classes. I'm bucking blasting, straight mashing, mobbing through the overpass laughing while these other motherfuckers trying to figure out. No doubt. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. I'm John Franklin. I'll be joined shortly, as always, by Craig Allen of Fight Night Picks. Craig. On this episode of Early Stoppage, it's an emergency. No, not a real emergency. And I know in these times it's not a word that should be thrown around, but this pod has some urgency based on two major news stories happening in the MMA world right now. Old pals Dana White and John Jones have had some questionable behavior in recent days. Both, as it turns out, might be a threat to society. Jones more overtly than Dana. All right, Craig. We're going to get into the into both, but let's start with John Jones and make it official. Damon Martin is reporting UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones was arrested by Albuquerque police early Thursday morning for aggravated DWI as well as negligent use of a firearm, according to arrest records obtained by MMA Fighting on Thursday. Jones was picked up just past 1 a.m. local time, and based on booking information, he's already been released from custody. He's due back in court on April 8th for a bond arraignment hearing per Pernalillo County District Attorney spokesperson Michael Patrick. All right, Craig. We throw the term addict around pretty loosely when it comes to Jones outside the cage, almost like the term slow starter or weak chin, terms that we use inside the cage, not for Jones, but for others. Listen, Jones is frustrating to fans, UFC brass, and media alike, but when are we going to take this guy's problem seriously? And maybe there is more at work here than just self-sabotage.
Like, I know we've got, like, quite a hefty list, and A, John, welcome to Fight Night Picks. You are John Franklin of Fight Night Picks. I don't have to be the only guy from Fight Night Picks, but B, and we'll get into an intro at a later date, but B, to answer your question, we should have taken these things seriously, you know, probably 7 or 8 years ago, or at least 5 years ago, when the guy served a lengthy bit of, he had probation slapped on him. It was basically a slap on the wrist for the accident that he had with the pregnant lady where he broke her arm and he fled the scene. And then he came back and he fled again. It's a shame because this isn't just John Jones, the fighter. This is John Jones, the person. And we've seen it where he's marketed fights as a bad guy. He's marketed it where he's kind of like a holier than thou type of figure. But where we're at right now, and I like where the question's at, like, is there more at work here than self-sabotage? I don't know. I mean, I'm not in his position. I've never had the issues that he's facing right now. But, man, it's got to be frustrating for everybody involved. I don't know if you would have seen this tonight. Your guy, Chael Sonnen, was on with Dana White on Instagram. Did you see that?
Saw a little bit of it, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw, like, little bits and pieces, too, and I started watching it over. But where people were in the comments, and Dana's like, da-da-da-da-da, John Jones, shut up, you idiot. And then he just kept going on and on. Like, it was no big deal. So I don't know what the UFC is going to do, but for John Jones, the person, man, like, this guy just, it seems like he can't get out of his own way.
Yeah, he can't get out of his own way. But we're going to go down the list here in a second of some of his run-ins with the law over the past however many years. I think it's around 8 or 9 at this point. So here's my issue with this. All right, and when I look at a guy like John Jones, it has to be more than just self-sabotage. It's easy to call this guy an idiot. It's easy to call him a waste of talent and all that stuff, right? But, you know, I mean, could we have said those same things about, you know, I just watched that documentary on Chris Benoit, some of these wrestlers that have gotten into things, and there's more to the story, right? And after something terrible happens, we start to piece things together and, like, okay, things start to make sense. You know, Chris Farley, John Belushi, all these guys who kind of – So I'm not saying – I think that because of John Jones's personality, We don't look at him as a sympathetic figure. We don't look at him as someone in need of help. We look at him as someone who's screwing up as opposed to someone that needs help. I'm not trying to forgive John his sins or his trespasses if you were raised Catholic. But, you know, listen, I just think that we got to look at this guy a different way. And we got to say, does something really seriously need to be taken away from him for his own good? And are we, and by me, I mean we, I mean fans, Dana, the media, are we enabling him by making all these things that happen a punchline? Is the fact that Daniel Cormier in a press conference calls him a junkie and turns it into a way to promote a fight and a way to put him down, is that just sort of sweeping under the rug a much larger problem? Now, before we get into your response to all that, let's talk about the laundry list. Okay, May 2012, Jones was involved in an incident where he drove his car into a telephone pole in Binghamton, New York. And first off, before I get fully into this, I want to credit Nicole Bosco from Fansided. She put this list together. That's why I grabbed it from friend of the show, Nicole Bosco.
That's true.
At the time, Jones was arrested for driving under the influence and later pled guilty to DUI. Okay, so it was one DUI. No jail time, paid a fine, license was suspended. In the lead up to UFC 178, Jones and Daniel Cormier were involved in an altercation. The two needed to be separated. Jones was fined $50,000, sentenced to 40 hours of community service. January 2015, Jones was scheduled to fight at UFC 182 when prior to the fight, he tested positive for a metabolite called benzoxylgonine or something to that effect, which is a known metabolite of cocaine. Jones was tested again prior to the fight and tested clean, so he was able to compete. So there's where this whole cocaine narrative got in into John Jones's life. This is the big one that we talk about all the time. Jones was fresh off his UFC 178 win in April of 2015. He was arrested in Albuquerque after leaving the scene of a hit and run. Jones was charged with felony of leaving the scene of the crime, having a marijuana pipe in the vehicle. One of the victims of the hit and run was a pregnant woman. Jones turned himself into police and was sentenced 18 months of probation and community service. So again, no jail time. July 2019, Jones was charged with battery, fine, claims for a waitress that Jones hit her and assaulted her. Jones pled no contest to this charge and was placed on 9-day probation. So all this time, he's obviously had his drug issues in terms of performance-enhancing drugs. So, but through this, there's been a very common theme, and it's no jail time. So listen, Craig, it has long been said that when your talent outweighs your trouble, you're kept around. However, when your trouble outweighs your talent, it's time to go. So at what point does Jones's trouble start to outweigh his talent and make his presence in the UFC no longer worth it? When is enough enough?
And from a fan perspective, right now. I mean, look at how he's performed since he's come back. He had the win over Alexander Gustafsson where he, you know, kind of avenged some demons. They had to move the pay-per-view card just for that fight. John Jones looks great. He absolutely demolishes Gustafsson, finishes him by TKO. And then after that, he beats Anthony Smith. He beats Thiago Santos. He beats Dominic Reyes. But he doesn't look like the same guy that he did before. And a lot of people are saying, is he still pound for pound great? Like right now, if you go in the UFC's rankings, he's the number one pound for pound fighter in the UFC, which you could say in all of MMA. And he could be, you know, in air quotes, undefeated. I mean, Matt Hamill's head stopped those 12-6 elbows, and he got a win out of it. But still, right now, we're still talking about the pound-for-pound greatest out there now and possibly of all time. When did the transgression start to outweigh the fighter? This is where we're getting on that slippery slope. He hasn't lost a fight, but the fight against Dominic Reyes was really close. The Thiago Santos fight was a split decision, and he's starting to lose rounds. If he starts losing fights, then maybe that's when it happens. But again, we can, I don't know if I'd liken it to BJ Penn, but look at the way that people talk about BJ Penn right now. I mean, we talked about him last week on our, what would you call it? Like our greatest of all time. And we went through the different divisions and it was hard to say, is BJ Penn the best lightweight of all time or not? And when we talk about BJ Penn, we don't talk about the BJ Penn that went, what, like 1-7 near the end. We talk about the BJ Penn that was lightweight champ, that was welterweight champ, that was one of the best of all time at the time. John Jones is starting to get there, but who knows? I mean, maybe he picks it up in his next few performances if he's allowed out there. But we're getting to that teetering point where, you know, it could be jail time or it could be a hefty amount of community service, this and that, so much that it takes him out of the limelight for a while. And we've already had times in, you know, UFC history and John Jones history when he's been an active fighter where he's had to take a long time off due to these transgressions. So to me, when your talent outweighs your trouble or vice versa, for me personally, I feel like 2015 was a big turning point. and they got it wrong. I mean, you can't, you know, how do you learn from something like that? It seems like a pattern of behavior. You know, you talk about it. Can this guy get out of his own way? I don't know if he can, but you look at the video, and I've seen it circulating on social media today, where the judge kind of says, you know, we better not see you back in this place again. Well, it's happened again. So what happens now? Is this it for John Jones? Is it not? I threw it out there, made a video earlier on today. I put the picture on Instagram, and honestly, felt pretty uneasy about sharing the video around just due to the subject matter. One of the comments, nothing is going to happen. This stuff has nothing to do with fighting. Okay. All right, I'm going to liken it to something totally different that has nothing to do with it. But I'm pretty sure, like, you know, OJ Simpson had a lot of, you know, TV deals, speaking engagements, this and that, that abruptly ended in the mid-90s. Did they not?
They did. And, you know, the larger thing here with bringing up O.J. Simpson is not so much that, you know, we're not comparing John Jones to O.J. Simpson. We are in a sense. But my thing is this. What were all the things that led to, had there been more, you know, intervention? And that's a tricky word to use because we've already kind of coined Jones as an addict. I mean, I think his behavior makes it clear that he is. But were there things where people could have intervened much earlier in O.J.'s life and maybe changed the course of history with respect to Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman? Now, I'm not saying that's what John Jones is going to do, but, you know, let's say 10 years prior to all this, you know, 10 years prior to when O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, they weren't saying the same stuff about O.J. Everybody thought he was a great guy. And, you know, so I was going to bring up that video as well with the judge. Someone has to step in, right? Because Dana's not going to step in. And the reason why Dana's not going to step in is for a couple of reasons. You know, he kind of talks out of both sides of his mouth when he says no one's above the UFC and yet continues to not punish people who get in trouble with the law. And he says he defers to the legal system and say, well, I'm going to let the legal system run its course. Well, if no one's bigger than the UFC and you have a problem with their behavior, then you should be able to say, listen, you survived without John Jones for 2 years, right? It's not like you can't. So for once, look for someone's well-being other than how much money you're putting in their pocket and make a decision that says if he's got to be out of the cage for 2 more years, then so be it.
I mean, look at the start of 2020. I know we're going to get into this, but 2020 in MMA, it's popping. I mean, you're on ESPN. You've got Conor McGregor back. You've got pay-per-views with McGregor and with John Jones. I mean, they're and there's no air quotes needed here. They're the two biggest stars in MMA. You can argue, but they're the two biggest stars. And it's great to see, A, champions that are active, but B, the biggest stars actually fighting. So in 2020, at the start, we've had that. But both of these guys come with a lot of baggage. And it seems like the UFC doesn't care about that kind of baggage. They don't care about fighter safety. They just want to put a product out there. And especially if they're the only ones that are putting a product out there, I mean, that's just the cat's behind.
You know, I'll say this. John Jones is well-known. So in terms of what's called a Q rating, like how many people know him, how relevant he is, his is very high. But he's never traditionally drawn well enough to not think that, you know, he draws better when he has, a name opponent. There are no name opponents out there. So if you're the UFC, you got to kind of look and say, you know, is it worth being in business with this kid right now? To sacrifice what could be his future in his life? And that's a decision only Dana White can make. But Craig, let's move on. We brought Dana White up, so let's get more into what he's been up to lately, the leader of the UFC and John Jones's boss. Dana has gone on a, quote, media tour as of late. Only thing is, he isn't talking to the media. He's been talking to Chael Sonnen and Robbie Fox, who can be described somewhere between friendly interviews and outright friends. They had Dana on, and to say they didn't press him would be an understatement. Craig, let's ask the question that neither Chael nor Robbie asked effectively. Is the insistence on going through with the cards as planned, or at the very least, the Khabib-Tony fight, what's in the best interest of the public and the fighters, or what's in the best interest of Dana and the folks over at William & Morris Endeavor who owe a monthly payment to their creditors?
Endeavor's a different story, but I'm just going to take my hoodie off for a second so you can see. Well, you can't see. It's a little dark, but I'm just a skinny guy, man. I'm just one of these nerdy media members, and I don't know any better. I don't know how to get out of my own way. And I know Colby Covington in 2019, it was nerd bashing season, but it seems like 2020, Dana's picked up that torch, and it's nerd bashing season. So it's kind of weird that he's gone on this, and you can't call it like a media tirade because it's been pals and friends, but he's gone on a couple of different shows. And even with Robbie Fox, I mean, you know, you look at Robbie Fox and some of the videos, he can't be much bigger than I am. I've never met him in person, but oh no, not you, not you. I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about the rest of the media. But in terms of your question and, you know, the UFC 249 card that all of a sudden it seems like, yep, we're going to get the card. There's odds out there in terms of where it's going to happen. Will it happen in Florida? Will it happen somewhere in the Middle East? Will it happen in Russia? I don't know. It just seems like it's not in the interest of the public. It seems like, hey, let's make a quick buck while the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, everybody else can't, you know, become power players. Let's do it. Because you can't just have an NHL season. You could, but you can't have an NHL season in the Middle East. I mean, those would have to be some slamming arenas to hold ice. You can't just have the NBA in the Middle East. It'd be way too hot. But you can have fighting over there. So let's try it. Let's do it. Let's make some money. And I mean, we saw that with the Brasilia card. Nobody else is doing anything. I was on the Fan 590 with Sportsnet. They had me on there because, you know, somebody's got to talk MMA, and I was the only one, so I got the call. But in terms of the UFC, it has to be it's a money play at this point. It's not for anybody's best interest. Who, realistically, we're talking about it. I'm pretty fired up now. Good question. Tony and Habib, great fight. Fifth time we're going to get it. You think they couldn't rebook that fight? Like, why couldn't they just rebook that fight? Yeah, I understand there's some limitations. Habib and Ramadan, you know, you got to take a little bit of a break. Have the fight later on in the summer or in the fall. Who really cares? Like, is it going to make that much of a difference? It's not like these guys are going to fight somebody else. So just hold off like everybody else is.
It's interesting that Khabib is willing to postpone fighting for Ramadan, but not for a global pandemic. So, I mean, it's, you know, listen, I get it. You know, I'm sure these two fighters are frustrated. You know, they want to prove which one of them is better. Dana wants to get the fight booked. A lot of what Dana's, you know, some of the stuff he said to Chael, some of the stuff he said to Robbie Fox is just about like, listen, I'm not telling anybody nothing because every time I bring something up, the media swarms on it and then figures out a way to get it shut down. I get where he's coming from. I do understand that in the interest of time, you know, he wants to get these fighters paid. I'm sure he wants to get himself paid. You know, it's like there's a lot of things can be true, right? I'm by no means on Dana White's side in this. I think the entire world should take a couple of months off. But, you know, I'm in a job where that's feasible. You know what I mean? I teach. So we could teach distance learning, and then it's going to be summer anyway. So doing that is feasible in my line of work. But, you know, obviously these fighters are keep things very close to, you know, to the zero in their bank accounts. So, I mean, I get it. You know, you got to fund a fight camp. I'm not criticizing them. I kind of understand what Dana's doing. But at the same time, I don't understand what Dana's doing because I think that none of this will be worth it. I mean, Dana's a gambler, and this is a hell of a gamble. And that gamble is if anyone gets sick, like massively sick, based on him running these cards, it's going to be problems for him. And I think that he's sort of like hoping for the best. So let's move this forward, Craig. Downplaying the pandemic and blasting the media is a familiar move. Dana White's friend Donald Trump's doing the very same thing right now. So my question is Dana playing politics in terms of is he kind of like, you know, sort of sub-supporting or low-key supporting Trump? Or is he just being a businessman in all this?
Again, I'll plead a little bit of ignorance. I think we talked about this a week or two ago as it was developing, especially with the Brasilia card, where I haven't been focusing on American news, and I typically do quite a bit. I was planning on going to Maine next month, April 18th. I was supposed to be in Maine. I can't go now. I mean, there's troops at the border now to keep people out. There's also in Canada, you can't go, you can, but you can't go from province to province. They have RCMP set up, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Mounties. So you can't go between provinces or testing for COVID-19. It's crazy. Like, it's so much to try and pay attention to between Canadian news and American news that I honestly haven't been paying attention to American news. So again, pleading ignorance. So to me, it seems like it's a power play and it's a business move. Like you said, he's a gambler. Rest in peace, Kenny Rogers. But in terms of Dana White and his whole strategy, we're trying to make money here. Nobody else is in this business. I mean, how big of a hero would Dana White look like? Because, hey, I know this much about the U.S. right now. They're showing UFC on ESPN. and they're doing really good numbers showing old UFC on ESPN. So if they're able to actually have a live card when all the other sports we're talking about, free agency, we're talking about if, ands, whens, buts, but the UFC, and that's a big but, they're going to hold a card, let's say next weekend. That's going to be the only thing that anybody's going to talk about. They're going to have me on the Fan 590 again. Who knows? But I think it's, again, it's a business power play. It's a gamble, just like you said. Great point. And, you know, if you're the only game in town on the biggest sports platform, like, we're not talking Fox days anymore. We're talking ESPN. Like, if Mike Golic's talking about this, holy smokes. Like, this is great. What's that show called?
What's up? It was Mike and Mike for a while. Yeah, I don't know. For me, where this gets interesting is, you're right. I mean, listen, Khabib and Tony would draw a good number no matter when you put it on. But if you put it on when it's the only game in town, you might be talking about a historic number because you're marketing it, you're going up against nothing else. You can completely, like, sort of streamline it to be – and you have this weird gimmick of the arena's empty. I mean, you could play that however you want. I mean, could you imagine just the idea of the two of these guys walking into an empty arena? And what all would come with that? So it's them two, it's Buffer, it's Herb Dean, you know, it's medical staff, it's who, and that's it. And I mean, that is insane. Could you imagine that fight with these two guys talking shit to each other and there being no one? I mean, everything's heard. I mean, listen, I get where Dana's coming from. I just think that you know, it's not the same as some other gambles that he's made.
I'll end with this for myself. I don't know if you watched Cage Warriors last weekend. Typically, we watch it. We don't preview it too much, but it's more or less, we know who the regional players are, this and that. Paddy Pimblett, huge star, right? Like, he was supposed to sign the UFC a couple of different times. It didn't happen. He's been out for almost 2 years. He comes back finally. He's supposed to take on Donovan Desme. It doesn't happen. He's supposed to take on another opponent. It doesn't happen. Now he's taking on Decky Dalton from Ireland. And, you know, he's a huge favorite. He's like a 4-1, 5-1 favorite. But, like, Paddy Pimblett, the last time he fought was in Liverpool. He's from Liverpool. Like, huge pop. Like, he's a superstar, not just Cage Warriors, but of European MMA. He fought on the card last week in front of nobody. And, like, his entrance music, it's like three different songs, and it's such a big, like, it's such a production. And it was so weird watching him. Like, he, you know, reacted like he normally would. Like, you've been there before, and he won, but, like, there's no huge pop. It was so weird watching that whole card and then having to feel for some of the athletes. Like, let's say you're Bartosz Fibinski, and you were originally slated to be on UFC London against, who was it, Shavkat Rakhmonov. The fight doesn't happen. Now you get Darren Stewart, who was supposed to fight somebody else. You guys fight. You're Bartosz Fibinski. You win. The UK goes on lockdown at midnight. And you're stuck in Birmingham, and you can't go back to Poland, or you have to find a way back to Poland. Who knows how? So if the UFC did something similar, and they go to, like, you know, the Middle East, or heaven forbid, they go to Florida of all places. Like, you have to wonder, like you said, what happens if somebody gets sick? Excuse me, I'm not crying, but that's on you. Like, you can't. It's reckless.
It's reckless, and I think it's also unfair that you're making the fighters to make this decision. You're saying, okay, you know, sometimes you have to protect people from themselves. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine about, like, what they're going to do with the schools. And, you know, there's talk about going back to school April 10th. Well, now you're asking teachers to make that decision. Whereas in Virginia, I live in Arizona, Virginia, they're done for the year. So it's like, you know, I understand that obviously each state has its own COVID-19 levels and they're being hit to certain extents. You know, obviously New York City's different than Arizona, is different than Montana, but it's, you're asking these fighters to make a decision with their life, not with their, you know, normally you're saying, okay, do you want to get in there? You know, and we'll talk about this on another podcast down the road, but do you want to be a fighter? You know, the thing Dana said, he's kind of asking them that, but, you know, it's life or death now. You know, not enough is understood about this thing to just sort of make a willy-nilly decision or being pressed into a corner where it's like, hey, I'm going to offer you a once in a lifetime opportunity here, and you have to choose between that and maybe getting COVID-19. I mean, that's a tough decision, and it's unfair to lay that at the feet of the fighters for something that's so, you know, not really all that well understood. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, this is kind of par for the course for Dana. This is what he does. It's not a surprise. This is how he's handling this. He's been handling it like this from the beginning. He's, you know, making the media, you know, Public Enemy number one. I get all his plays from a business perspective, right? I've been watching some, with the WWE Network being free, I've been watching some of the stuff Vince McMahon pulled back in the day in terms of getting the territory. So Dana's just striking while the iron's hot. And I get that. But, you know, what Vince did back in the day cost people jobs and money, not their lives. This is a little bit different in my opinion. So, all right, guys, there's your emergency pod. Hit us in the comments with your thoughts. I can't wait to see what you guys have to say about me after what you said about Craig and Matt. Let me have it. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen F&P. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next time. Craig, say something witty.
It's Fight Night Picks. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it.